2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. I'm here with my co-host and our lead fantasy analyst, Dylan White. And after the top 200 was updated last week, I almost tripped over and said top 100 again. I seem to do that consistently. We are back with a more standard issue of the podcast. I was searching for words there. But Dylan, welcome to the show. How's your week been, man? How you doing?
Not too bad. Survived the air quality index fiasco of 2023 and breathing in nice, fresh, rainy air in Toronto.
How long were you guys pretty much inside all week? Like, how bad was it up there? I mean, because we had some here in, you know, New England, but the fires were there, of course.
Yeah, it wasn't like the photos in like New York with the yellow sky and all that. I didn't really smell it like a campfire. There was just like kind of a faint tinge, but I did get a headache and a sore throat. So I basically stayed inside, walked the dog like just around the block instead of his normal jaunt. But yeah, pretty nuts. All those photos on Twitter of what's going on in New York and Philly and all that.
Yeah, we had some of that with the sky, but it felt like, my friend that was in like Rochester had those skies, and I think they were fairly close because they're pretty close to the Canadian border there. They were fairly close to the fires. So yeah, it was an interesting early part of the week, but there we go. What are you going to do? Glad that things are looking better for all of us. And our air is fresher, you know. Anything else? How's your Tout Wars team? How are your teams doing? I've had a rough go with my head-to-head league teams over the last couple of weeks, my home league and Tout. I think I've lost 5 of the last 6 in Tout after like starting the season 3-1. So it's going great.
My teams are actually doing pretty well. It feels like I've been struggling all season, but I'm in first in Tout, and I like to keep track every week, and I'm projected to like duke it out for first, so I'm happy about that. But it's going to be tough. It's so tight, like the standings move up and down constantly. My OC that I'm co-managing with Jordan is in first currently. But we lost to Grom. We also have Aaron Judge on that team. So it's going to be tough again. The projections have us kind of in the thick of it as well. We were like 100th in the overall, 150th in the overall, which isn't too bad. I kind of advise on a main, and we're in fourth, I think, in that, and also projected to do pretty well. So that's okay. And then my dynasty teams, I'm doing very well in those. My three main dynasties, I'm in first or second. In all of them, my home league, I'm in second. What am I missing? Oh, TGFBI. It's a tough league this year that I'm in. I mean, I think I'm in sixth, but projected to be like basically tied for first with two other people, with Bubba and Brad Williamson's in my league. Alex Chamberlain's in my league. Mike Richards is in my league. Prospect Itch is in my league. It's
Drew Wheeler's
in my league. Yeah, it's every week it's like 40 pickups. And like everyone's kind of engaged basically. Whereas in the past, like the COVID season, for example, it'd be like 5 pickups a week sometimes. So it's been pretty competitive. But yeah, pretty good season, even though it feels like I'm struggling every week.
I'm 4-6 now in Tout, which has been really rough because I started out well to begin the season, was like a top 3 race. And I think like I have to look at the live standings actually and see, but scoring wise, I was pretty far up there. Last week was so bad that I dropped down. I was in third in overall like point total. And then over the last week, I've had two teams past me. So I'm now in 5th total points. I'm in 7th in the league. It's been a rough go. I lost to Grom there as well. I've had like a rash of pitching injuries in that league. I have DeGrom. I have Cal Quantrill's now on the IL. Nestor Cortez is on the IL. I just got back Michael Grove, who pitched all right the last couple of weeks. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, I'm glad that I went with the multiple ace strategy there. I have Kershaw, I have Kirby, I have Cole. So I do have some guys that can hold some weight, but I need some of them to get hot. Cole's kind of just been okay. That's hurt me in my home league as well, which is a 12-team head-to-head. I think I'm 6-3 in that league. Or 6-4. Like I'm 6-4. So I think I'm among the teams. I'm in second in my division, but tied record wise and tied for second in the league overall. So that one not going as well as I hoped it would. I'm getting crushed right now in Nerf. My pitching started off great. That was another league where I had DeGrom. He got hurt. That's been an issue. I've been getting outbid on a ton of players over the last couple of weeks. Need to get more aggressive, I guess, next week again to replace more players. And I've had a lineup that I think like looks great on paper, but it just hasn't been a very, very good team this year. And then lost Vinny Pasquantino this week as he went on the IL. So it's been a rough one there. Now, as far as, you know, my RCL, my Razzball League, I'm in second in that one. I've been moving up quick. Got a ton of starts to still make up. I think I have a pretty good shot at first. It's Matt Truss that's ahead of me in that one. He's a great RCL player. I like that league because it's daily moves, unlimited, like, waiver moves, you know, pickups, which helps. So I can actually, like, craft the team. I can manage the team every day, which I do better with that than I do with weekly leagues. For what it makes me crazy. You know, like I can schedule plan. I can look at two start pitchers. I can do all those things. And my luck just hasn't been good in those leagues this year. And then in our Baseball America Dynasty League, I am in fourth, but I'm one of the higher scoring teams in that league. I'm only one game out of first place. I wasn't first a couple weeks ago. So I got that going. And then in my 30-team league, my RAS 30, which is, I would say, probably my favorite fantasy league, I am in third in the NL, but the two best teams in the league are in the National League, the Dodgers and the Braves. I have the Reds, who are in fourth overall. And then the Rays are the class of the American League. They are the only team from the American League in the top four. So, now I've talked about my teams. You people really care about that. Everyone's tuned out, and they've stopped listening to the podcast. So let's bring in some good news. Elliot De La Cruz was called up since we last recorded. He's now played 6 games. This will be his 7th tonight. We're recording on Monday night. Some strikeouts, a lot of walks, some unbelievable plays, some power. He's shown the speed. Where do you lie on Elliot De La Cruz last the season? On a scale of 1 to 5, how excited are you, Dylan?
Excited, I'm at 5, I guess. I mean, he is probably the most exciting player in baseball right now. Ohtani, obviously, would be in there. Acuna, I guess, as well. Though we're bored of these guys, the old guys. We want the new young blood with the 80 arm, the 80 speed, the 80 power, 80 raw. Super excited. Do I think he's going to be an incredible producer rest of season? I don't know if it's incredible, but, 15-15 is within possibility, 250 batting average type thing. I think people would be happy with that. I think they would want more, but I think that's pretty solid.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's just... you can look at some of the underlying stuff and get nervous about the swing and miss and the contact, but he's just so twitchy and unique that he's one of these guys. And if he's taking his walks, he's going to hit his nukes. He's going to get on base. He's going to steal some bases. He's going to score a lot of runs, make some unbelievable plays. Sometimes it doesn't have to make sense. You know, all the numbers don't have to necessarily click if the impact is there and the twitch and just, you know, his ability to do things other guys can't. So, I wouldn't panic whatsoever here. This wasn't on the agenda, but I do want to say kudos to us for telling people not to panic on Gunnar Henderson. Gunnar's hot. I don't know if you noticed that or not.
I haven't fully noticed, but I do see that some tweets. He hit one like 462 feet or whatever, maybe yesterday. And I know he's been relatively hot, and I see him in the lineup all the time. But I actually don't have him on any teams, and so I'm not like totally following every day. But I do know he has turned it around.
Yes, so far in June, he is hitting the cover off the ball, Dylan. And I'll get you what that slash line is right now, actually. Of course, I should have been more prepared for this conversation, considering I led us into said conversation. But come on, Fangraphs, load up for me, buddy. He's hitting 458, 480, 1,000 with four home runs, a double, seven RBIs, and two steals in the month of June, which I think is a total of eight games. So there you go. Some great production from Gunnar. I actually think if we go back and look, he's been hot for pretty close to a month now, if I'm not mistaken. So there you go. Take that to the bank with you. You know, kind of interesting. Gunnar doing some big things. It's good to see. Corbin Carroll, of course, has been tremendous over the last, really the entire season, but the last 2 weeks he's gone absolutely bananas, which is another good thing to see. Happy to see that. Happy to see, you know, our top two prospects producing. Of course, I think there's probably a case that Carroll should be one, should have been one. Maybe a bit of a mistake, but we'll see. Long-term careers. I think the people that were panicking, I saw a lot of panicking tweets and had a lot of panicking conversations with readers on Gunnar Henderson. And it was just like, stay the course. This guy can hit. There's impact. There's opportunity there. The organization's going to stick with him. And I think people forget that you can have a really bad 2 months, be great the remainder of the season, and have a really good season. It happens all the time. You know, I can think of one in particular was Brian Dozier that year, that like the last month of the season, he hit like 20 home runs or something, or like won people leagues. And I think he was getting dropped like before that, you know. That always happens. I actually picked up Michael Harris in a 12-team league because he was dropped. It was kind of like, well, I have outfield depth, but I'll grab Michael Harris and see what the heck he does over the next few months and hope that I didn't own the bad part of Michael Harris and own the good part. And that's what's great about the waiver wire, kind of, isn't it? Like your ability to do that stuff. So that being said, let's move on. I don't know if you had any other news or notes or thoughts, things that you ran into. We could talk about our fantasy leagues again, Dylan. Anything you wanted to touch on?
How did Ellie De La Cruz bidding go in your bidding leagues?
So he was already rostered in any league I have that could have been on it. Dynasty leagues, redraft leagues. He was rostered for a couple of weeks in my 12-team RCL, in my NERF league, which is typically my good, that's my only NFBC. He was already rostered. Baseball Pods already had him on his team. So kudos to Chris for holding on to Ellie De La Cruz for quite a while. So unfortunately, I didn't get to like just release all of my fab at him. I actually should probably look at Tout and see what he went for. I did not need another hitter there, so I didn't bid on him because I wasn't sure that I was going to be able to fit him in my roster every day, which might be foolhardy. It's possible, but I would have to check. How about your leagues? What did he go for in those leagues?
In the main, he was already gone, and TGFBI, he was already gone. In the OCs, which are 12 team, he went, I think one of them he went for 400 and the other one somewhere in that area. In Tout, I only bid 61 to drop Tovar to pick up Ellie De La Cruz for an upgrade. I knew I wouldn't get him. It was just sort of it's a 12 team league as well. So just
yeah, you got to put him in the bid.
But yep. Matt Trussell, who is my main competition with Sarah Sanchez and probably Chris Clegg, he grabbed him for $563 out of 1,000. He's only got less than $100 left for the rest of the season. I wanted, like I said, I have a pretty good team and it's pretty deep. I think if I just like kind of like play conservative, I can like ride it out, I hope. So I didn't want to spend too much money and have no money and then realize I blew the the season by spending too much money. So hopefully I can still ride it out. But yeah, what I did notice, I wanted to say, was O'Neal Cruz got stashed in a bunch of leagues. I think people were like, if Elliott Cruz is the last person to have this, you know, 2020 upside, etc., and I don't want to spend $400, who's the next best thing? And I think people just went and stashed O'Neal Cruz, who maybe for the last 2 months of the season could be Ellie De La Cruz light, and not have to spend $400. So sort of in every league, O'Neal Cruz got picked up this week. Pretty smart and pretty savvy. I was hoping I could wait a couple of weeks, but I guess the psychological aspect of seeing everyone bidding on Ellie De La Cruz had people saying, well, I better get the next best thing. Trevor Story was stashed as well in another league. So I think people are realizing like these are the last kind of hurrahs and they don't want to be involved in this fabageddon. And so like, I'll stash him for weeks so I don't have to spend $400.
That Story move is a pretty astute grab as well. And I will say another astute grab was, I looked back, Frank Stanfill actually bought Ellie De La Cruz the week before he was called up in my tout league for $4. So Wow. Credit to Frank Stanfill. He spent $182 on Andrew Abbott in the same period. So I guess one hand washes the other, but I think that he got a discount there a wee bit. That said, we've talked about the fab aganda for Ellie De La Cruz, which I unfortunately was unable to be involved in. Let's talk about our main topic here, which I think is an interesting trend that we have seen over the last couple of weeks, and that is players who skip domestic complex leagues, international players who skip domestic complex leagues, which is incredibly rare, to play at full season levels. It started at the beginning of the season. Nelson Rada was one that was assigned to low A. Louis Lara kind of followed a month or so later, where he sort of followed, I guess, what they're calling the Jackson Churio path, just because he's a Brewers outfielder, I guess, that went to Carolina. But then Ethan Salas and Jose De Paula. Austin Charles spent a few games, I think two games, in the ACL before he was out at Columbia and the Royals' low-A affiliate. Jefferson Rojas was assigned to low-A. I think Jonathan Mejia skipped complex ball as well of the Cardinals. So let's sort of talk through some of these players here. Dylan, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Louis Lara, sort of how you view him, where you feel he needs to be rostered in terms of depth for fantasy leagues, prospects, minors, etc.
Yeah, I took him in a couple leagues right after he got assigned. I think we had him in sort of the back end of the 100. So, you know, we do view him pretty highly in fantasy. So I think he's definitely got to be rostered in leagues that have less than 100. I think he's so young. I mean, all these guys we're talking about are so young. The bat control, the hit tool is excellent. The underlying like contact skills and all that are great. Doesn't swing and miss. Right now he's a WRC plus of 138. I guess the only thing that's stopping him is the power right now, and he's only 18. Hopefully he can develop. He can hopefully grow into it. It is pretty low, the power right now, but just the back control just seems to be so good that you know, he should be able to develop it, I believe. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the plate skills are tremendous. Bat to ball is, you know, above average, probably plus. You know, I'm always a little nervous to throw pluses on these guys because they have a long time to prove it. That's not the case, but it's probably there. The plate approach is good. He's a smaller guy. There's not a lot of impact. I know I'm kind of repeating pretty much what you said, but I do agree. I do think that he's somebody that, you know, as he gets stronger, bigger, that plate approach, that plate discipline, that could turn into a player that, you know, swings at the right pitches, knows how to optimize. I know that he catches a lot of the barrel now. And as he gets bigger, stronger, I think we'll start to see more impact. I don't know if it's ever going to be like true 50 plus power. It might be a tick below, just being conservative here, but he could be a guy with batting average and all the other things that kind of checks all the boxes and doesn't kill you in the power department, but you never know. Guys grow into power, especially when we're talking about 17, 18 year old players. They have a lot of time to come into their body and sort of find that next gear. So totally agree there. Yeah, I think he's an interesting one. I think I had him right in the back end of my top 100. I like the plate skills a lot. I know, for example, you know, people were talking about a guy like Chase Meadroff and all the things that he's done. He's been tremendous. And especially if you're looking at the numbers and whatever, you know, it seems like he has a couple of hits a night, gets on base a couple of times. Plate skills are tremendous. But he's an older guy that probably doesn't have as much projection in terms of the power as like a guy like Laura does, which is why I would gamble on the guy like Laura, gamble on the upside. Even if I'm giving up maybe a year or two of immediacy, I think that sometimes in the short term, we buy into that. And then we sort of look back and say, yeah, you know, we take a step back and say, I should have gone for this, the higher end guy. I lost a year here, but the production was made up in 2 years of this other player of what this guy got in three or whatever, you know? So for me, Laura is one of those plate skills guys that I'm way on, though it's not typically my jam. Let's move on to the next one here. Nelson Rada, he's been up since the beginning of the season. Rada, I've noticed, is starting to get hot over the last month or so, we'll say. And he's starting to settle in, find his footing and his surroundings, which makes a lot of sense for as young as he is and a lack of experience with full season baseball. It's good to see things are starting to get going. And I've seen him move up in the RoboScout rankings over the last couple of weeks, if I'm not mistaken, Dylan. So talk to me a little bit about that and what are your thoughts on Nelson Rada?
Yeah, he is one of the youngest at the level. Not as young as Ethan Salas, of course, but it looked pretty like he was overmatched at the beginning of the season. I had him in a couple leagues. He wasn't really doing anything. It was the fact that he was so young that it was kind of like keeping my interest. But yeah, he has turned it on. The big thing is he's stealing a lot of bases. He's like fourth, I think, in low A in stolen bases. He has 27 stolen bases with 5 caught. So that's kind of boosting his fantasy value and giving him a nice floor there. He does hit the ball on the ground a lot. That's one thing I'm a bit concerned about. It's at 57% right now. And he doesn't have any home runs on the season. But the exit velocities aren't great, but he is in his age 17 season. And, that's very, very impressive to be doing what he's doing in low A. He's got a 113 WRC plus as a 17-year-old. That's quite noteworthy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when we look at the bat to ball was good, the swing decisions are good. And it's not like he's overly passive, which is good to see. He has hit a ball 104, 105, which I think is at least somewhat interesting when you're considering a 17-year-old. You know, if we had a perfect game guy who was going in and, you know, his max exit velocity on PG was 105, we would be, or 104, we would be pretty impressed with that, frankly, you know, because I think one of the things you have to keep in mind with Nelson Rada is he is so young that he would not be eligible for this year's draft. He would probably be a slightly older high school senior next year. So this is a guy that is effectively, you know, what Cam Collier was a year ago in JUCO. That's what this guy is. Only he's playing in a full season level from day one, which is just crazy to think about, you know? So I think you got to sort of take some of the numbers, the power numbers, with a grain of salt. As we know, the last tool to really sort of fully develop and mature is strength and power. That's something that will come as guys get into their 20s. So be interesting to follow along with Rada and see how he progresses over the next 2 or 3 years. And if he does grow into power, there are a lot of guys like this that are advanced hit tool guys early in their careers that don't necessarily grow into the power. The good thing when I look at Laura, I look at Rada, is the fact that they're not chasing. They're not just sort of these swing happy contact hitters. They're guys that can make contact. They take their walks and it's not overly passive. So I think that's sort of a good thing to look at. So let's jump on to the next one. This is arguably the most exciting from a real life standpoint I think you could probably make a case that he's maybe the most exciting from a fantasy standpoint as well. And that is Ethan Salas. Salas would be another guy who just barely would be eligible for the draft next year. So he's the same age as the high school class we're going to be talking about in a few months after the draft, and we're starting to look to the 2024 draft. That's the same age as Ethan Salas and all these guys. So I think it's another remarkable thing to think about. But he does have a little bit more impact. I'm not so sure that the plate skills are as good. He doesn't chase necessarily. He does take his walks. There is some swing and miss in the game. But that being said, this guy was 16 years old as of 11 days ago. So he is incredibly young. We know about how advanced he is as a catcher. How excited are you for Salas? How would you rank him in comparison to the two prior names that we've talked about in Rada and Laura?
I think he's got to be number one ahead of those guys for sure. I think it's just like the baseball IQ he's showing. So young, he's like managing pitching staffs who are, you know, 5 years older than him or whatever, 3 years older than him, and excelling, and just like the defense is there. He's the captain of the field, basically, it feels like. And so, you know, he's going to have a major league career as a key individual on a major league team. But yeah, he has slowed down a bit. The strikeouts are up to, 26%, which is higher than Nelson Rada, and his WRC plus is 110, which is lower than Nelson Rada. But it's just the whole package. It's almost literally the whole package is there. And that's just going to be very exciting to watch his career blossom.
Yeah. I somewhat agree. I think that with Salas, there is more power. He's super advanced. He's exciting. It's still a catcher, which worries me a little bit. And I do think you could look at Laura and Rada and say that they could maybe grow into a little bit more strength. Not that Salas won't, but maybe a little bit more, maybe some of that is a little bit more actualized considering his background, who his father is as a trainer, and his brother obviously is, Jose Salas, and now the Twins. So there is some connection there, some understanding of what it takes to go through that process and get things to happen. So, there's not much that I can knock with Salas necessarily, and it sounds even stupid to say that. I guess I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit here, just because I do think there's always risk with catching prospects in fantasy. In reality, Salas, this isn't even a question. Salas is the clear guy that we rank way above him. I think I've even gone on record and said that you could maybe say that Salas is a top 20 prospect in the game for real life purposes because of the value of his defense, how smooth he is back there, and the fact that he's not a non-zero as an offensive player and could be an above average, maybe even plus offensive player at the end. So I think if we're projecting out 5 years from now, Salas is the best baseball player. I could maybe see if Laura or Rada grow into a little bit more power, having higher fantasy seasons, though it's not something that I would put my mortgage on, for example. You bet the mortgage on Ethan Salas. You know what? Let's take a quick break here, Dylan. We'll be right back after a word from whatever this is.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And we're back. All right, Dylan. We've already gone through three studs that skipped domestic complex leagues and went to full season levels. In Louie Laura of the Brewers, Nelson Rada of the Angels, Ethan Salas of the Padres. We have a few more names, Dylan. Let's talk a little Josue de Paula. So de Paula was a name that we were very heavy on probably for the last year. I know we weren't the only ones that were excited about de Paula. But I feel like I really tried to beat the drum here. You were beating the drum. I think you had one of us had him as a sleeper in the offseason. Both of us might have had him on our all breakout team. He's a little bit older. He just turned 18 back in May. Originally from the United States, but did sign as an international player to the Dominican Republic. I think I've mentioned this a million times. He is cousins with former NBA superstar Stephon Marbury and former NBA first round pick Sebastian Telfair. I was trying to think of how to introduce that one. He's walking, he's striking out a little bit. It's been eight games. The numbers aren't good. He's hitting 138, 306, 172. But it's been eight games at a full season level. I do not want to write this player off or panic at all after eight games. I will say he has had hits in consecutive contests heading into Monday.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the more popular sleepers. All that stuff you're talking about, the buzz surrounding, you know, the bloodlines. If you look at historical performance, his performance compared to historical players, like the comps were kind of ridiculous. So I guess there was unfair expectations put on him. So yeah, he started off a bit slow. But like you said, he's 18 and it's only been whatever, eight games. I'm not concerned at all. I did move him in one of my leagues. That's not a knock against him. It's just more of a like cashing in these prospects while the iron is hot. I have a feeling I may regret that one just because I really think he's going to turn into, he's in the Dodgers. Dodgers are going to Dodger. He's going to be a big name in top 100 lists for, you know, in the next year or so for sure.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. For sure. I think, you know, he's exciting. I love the potential power that's there. He's going to grow into more of it. It's just so early. It's tough for anyone to have any takeaways off of eight games. I mean, you have to think about the bigger picture here. So hopefully de Paula gets it going. I think from a power perspective of all the players that we talked about thus far, Josue de Paula has the highest power upside. He didn't earn the nickname Baby Yordan for nothing. Next one I wanted to mention here is Austin Charles. He did not technically skip a domestic complex league. He was in the complex league last year for three games. The Arizona complex league, he's a Royals player. He was in the complex league for two games this year. In those two games, he had a homer, he had a double, he had a triple, he had two singles. Five runs scored, three RBIs, did have some punch outs. There is some swing and miss in his game. He is now at a full season level. He is at low A Columbia. So that being said, Austin Charles, he's a domestic player, California high school kid, if I'm not mistaken, 20th round pick of the Royals last year. Kind of a good steal by them. Kudos to them. He is a big boy, by the way. 6'4", 215, 220. He's strong. you know, he's big. There's definitely projectable power there. I think it's starting to show in games. Just a matter of like how much swing and miss is there. How refined is the hit tool? Once we get some numbers on it, we'll know. He's another guy where it's been three games at the full season level, two games in the complex. This sample size is not big enough yet for us to draw any conclusions. I know you're less familiar with Austin Charles. I don't know if you dug into him at all this week, where he shows up on RoboScout, if you have anything to sort of add there. You don't have to.
He's not on RoboScout yet just because he hasn't had enough plate appearances accrued. No, I know he was a very popular target in all my dynasty leagues. Not even this week. It was the week before that he was starting to get buzz, I guess. People saying, oh, here's a sleeper to watch, a 20th round pick who's now being a steal from the Royals. I don't really have much to comment on. Without my robot friend, I'm flying blind here.
I'm useless without the robot.
Exactly.
That is absolutely hilarious. All right, so that's kind of Austin Charles there. I know James had Welsh on his podcast last week, the RoboWire. I'm getting all of my wires crossed here. The RotoWire Prospect Podcast with James Anderson. I suggest that you subscribe, like, listen, that whole thing. One of the classic shows here in the space, one of the longest running prospect shows out there. He had Welsh on. I listened to that on my way back from a Cape League game last night. And Welsh had the pleasure of actually seeing Austin Charles and was really impressed. So go and listen to that if you want some inside info, because he's had laid eyes on the man, which neither of us have. Though I have watched some video. I did tweet about him a little bit. He is very interesting. Next one I want to talk about here is someone that we were tipped off about by one of our coworkers, one of our colleagues, Josh Norris, one of my co-hosts, though I have about five co-hosts now at this point. Dylan, what are your thoughts on Jefferson Rojas? Cubs prospect, by the way, who got assigned to low A. Is it Myrtle Beach?
Yeah, I think so. We got tipped off. I almost said Josh Rojas by Josh Norris there.
It makes you want to say it, doesn't it? Like,
it does. that he's got, the one to watch. And I took a look at him. And so in the DSL last year, the data was more that he's contact without much power. But this year, it's kind of like I saw some video and he's like, he's got a nice, really vicious swing, to be honest. So it'd be interesting if he's maybe changing his approach. He only has 17 plate appearances right now, but age 18 and in low A, you already have an advantage over your colleagues in RoboScout. He already has a home run. He has a 178 WRC plus, 17 plate appearances, of course. I 10% ground ball rate. So I think he may be just like swinging from the heel. So I'm kind of curious to see how it plays out. It's someone I picked up actually in a bunch of my leagues right now, just from what I saw on the video and just from that tip from Josh.
I got a good bid on him when I knew he was going to be assigned to low A. By the way, he did play on the complex this year. I was incorrect. He had one game on the complex before he moved to Myrtle Beach. So allow me to correct myself and retract my former statement with a correction. So there are a few players on this list that did not totally skip complex league for all intents and purposes, though we more or less skip complex league. I mean, let's be honest here. Next guy I'm going to bring up here is the Cardinals' Jonathan Mejia, who went to low A as well. He skipped the complex league, though their low A affiliate is right next to the complex. He played in the DSL last year. He was injured for a bit, was actually assigned in late May. On the 23rd was his first game. He just returned to action this weekend, had a hit and four at bats, and the hit was a double. Also had three strikeouts, but we won't talk about that. But he was a guy that ranked pretty highly, signed for a ton of money out of the Dominican Republic. Switch hitter, kind of a bigger, more filled out body, not necessarily a great fielder, not super speedy, but there's an advanced hit tool there. There's some power. He hit 267, 418, 479 with five home runs across 45 games in the Dominican Summer League last year. So, any thoughts, Dylan, other than the fact that he has not hit a ball, a fly ball yet this year across six games?
No, I have an eye on him. I know he was ranked quite highly as one of the international prospects guys to watch by, I believe, Juicy Jensen. I think he was one of his favorites. We have him hitting a 107 max. That may be a mishit, a mislabel, but his launch angles look pretty good. His contact skills look pretty good. I do think it's hit over power, but if he can hit 107 and the DSL, then maybe that there's a lot of power to be unlocked there. So I'm keeping an eye on that. Once we start getting the numbers in, I'll be highly attuned to seeing how he's doing.
Absolutely. Well, there we go. Those are all the players we planned on talking about today. If there's any that we missed, you could certainly let us know. Kind of stuck to hitters here. I want to bring up your article from this week. This was the first time that you dove into the complex league standouts. And that was kind of the focus of the opening this week. You know, and I thought you had a funny tweet there that it was irresponsible, but at the same time you were doing it anyway. So any sort of name you want to bring up from that numbers? I know that it's like five games, so it just started last week. So there's only so much that we can go off of, but interested to hear, you know, any thoughts that you might have.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an average of 16 plate appearances or something like that. So it's grossly irresponsible to talk about. But, you know, there are a couple names I touch on at the complex levels. I talk about Arizona, I talk about Florida, and I talk about the DSL. I think one of the names, I'm not giving away the farm here by saying it, is like Emmanuel Tejeda, the Yankees. In his 22 plate appearances in the Florida Complex League, he already has two home runs and four stolen bases and has not been caught. So he's doing quite well. He did quite well last year too, in the DSL, and his stat cast looked pretty good. He doesn't chase. He has good contact. His exit velocities are average, but you know, if he has two home runs and 22 plate appearances in Florida right now at age 18, it's looks like he's got power. So that's one of the names I talk about. I talk about a few others. The DSL, no one's really standing out yet, though. I do like Abraham Nunez Jr. of the White Sox. I talk about him. He has a home run, three stolen bases, and 17 plate appearances, age 17. He's got bloodlines. He's athletic. He's got a good body. Plays center field right now. So he's someone I'm watching. But, you know, the DSL, you got to take it with a grain of salt.
Yes.
It's great performances are not necessarily in the DSL is not necessarily indicative of great future performances. Like Malcolm Nunez and Alejandro Mojica had like incredible seasons of 300 WRC plus, and they were young and it all looked great, and they haven't really met that potential that they were showing in the DSL once they came stateside. So keep the DSL with a grain of salt, but the complex league stateside domestic ball is lot of jewels to be mined. And it's always the best part. I touch on that in my article too. It's always like my favorite time of year when the complex league starts, because this is where you can get your hands dirty and find these guys before, you know, the rest of the industry kind of catches on.
Absolutely. And I think if you have a few spots that are in flux this time of year, know who your first drops are. It is a important component of mining the waiver wire for some of those uncut gems. So totally agree there. But Dylan, we've got about 40 something minutes here. I don't think we have anything else we want to mention. We've covered a lot of stuff. We've covered a lot of interesting young players that you can go out and get in your dynasty leagues, or if you're in shallower leagues, at least flag and maybe pay attention to. I would urge you to head over to Baseball America. We are updating the top 30 list this week. We just updated the AL East. Those were released on Friday. The NL East was released on Monday. Today, Tuesday, when you're listening to this, or maybe you're not, maybe you're listening to it a few days after. But on Tuesday, we released the AL Central, followed by the NL Central, AL West, followed by the NL West. So all throughout the week, we are going to be pumping out these first updates. We're going to update again in July. We typically update again in August. We sort of do the post-draft updates. We put the guys in. We also then do sort of the post-trade deadline updates. So we'll have a few more updates throughout the season. Keep stay tuned. And of course, go and read the RoboScout article that came out this week. That's my second plug for that one. And anything that is published over at Baseball America. We appreciate your subscription. It's how we pay the bills, keep the lights on, feed the kids and all that good stuff. And thanks for tuning in and appreciate it. Have a good one, guys.
Cheers.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.